Welcome to another episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast discussing SDN solutions that real engineers use in production networks. In one of the previous podcasts, we talked about a tool with unpronounceable name, sounding something like PMACCT, and that tool can help you figure out the traffic flows that traverse your network. Obviously, a mandatory prerequisite to any traffic engineering solution, regardless of whether it's OpenFlow-based or SDN-blessed, or using 30-year-old protocols that just happen to work well. Most of us have to deal with some traffic congestion in QoS, but imagine the headaches a company must have that generates 30% of the internet traffic in US. An excellent reason to invite my longtime friend Eliza Jasinska, the flow tracker at Netflix. How are you today, Eliza?
Hello, Ivan. I'm very well. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. Just had a picnic with the kids, so it's early evening over here, sunny, and you are on the West Coast, right?
I'm still buried in US time over here. We just had a meeting over at the office. I'm flying over on a regular basis here, but I'm still residing in Europe and having fun working from home. So this is just passing through.
That's great. So you're still based in Poland?
I am indeed, yes. And Krakow is beautiful and sunny and it's summer and everyone should come visit.
Yeah, it looks like I'll miss you yet again because Interop and PLNOC are at exactly the same week. So too bad.
Oh, I'm actually not going to be there for PLNOC either.
Okay, so we'll be absentees.
Exactly. They have a knack for scheduling it whenever something else is happening in the US. I'm gone all the time.
So you plan to be at Interop?
No, I think we have another internal office meeting going on that week, so I'll be over here.
Too bad.
You know, you just need the FaceTime with your coworkers when our entire team works distributed from home. So it's really good to get some time to hang out and catch up and see what's going on for everyone involved. So that's why we do this on a very regular basis.
By the way, talking about Krakow, when we first met, you had the best ever job title I've seen. It was Packet Herder, right?
That's true.
And that was Limelight?
That was back at Limelight, indeed.
And then the next time we met, you were at Microsoft, and then we didn't meet for a long time, and you are at Netflix now.
You need to review my job hopping career of the past year and a half, don't you?
No, I'm just asking.
So I guess the brief story is I got a great opportunity at Microsoft, and I wanted to give it a try, and it took me a year to figure out that I'm not really the right person for a too corporate environment. You know, every job culture needs the right personality to fit in there. And actually, speaking of job culture, Netflix is really big on promoting their open culture they have at the office. So this is just something that suits me better. And here I am now.
By the way, what's your job title now?
It's Network Toolsmith.
Okay. So I hoped you would be Flow Tracker, but okay.
No, it's Toolsmith. So Netflix, when I joined them about 8 months ago now, didn't really have a whole lot going on when it comes to tools and software. So we had a little bit catch-up work to do, pretty much starting from scratch with anything you can possibly think of. I mean, I was trying to fix up the Rancid installation they had going on because not even that was maintained to an extent that a toolsmith would be happy with, let's say it this way. I'm pretty picky about things being set up the right way. So we started out from scratch and I had a lot of room to pretty much define the direction we're going and what we're doing with all the tools that we have around maintaining the network. So I think toolsmith is a little bit more appropriate in that context than just flow tracking, although it is part of my job as well.
So you're effectively the person that is automating the Netflix network.
Pretty much, yes. I have some great help from great engineers and architects that we have on our networking team. they come up with ideas. We'll discuss the direction and how to approach things. But then I end up writing it down and coding it and writing the scripts and making sure it's all put in place the right way. You know, it's often all the places are very similar when it comes to priorities around the network. All architects and engineers are so busy just dealing with the day-to-day things that pop up on the engineering side. No one really has a lot of time to think about the long term and take some time to actually put things like that in place. So they often just get left behind unless you have someone dedicated to the job.
So you think that like every organization should have a toolsmith job function and someone like you filling it?
Probably, yeah. It has been kind of the place that I've taken in all the companies I've worked for so far. Microsoft had an entire team of software engineers doing this, so I was not by myself there, which in all the other places I have been at Limelight, for example, and now as well. But yeah, definitely.
And by the way, I'm totally green from envy. You have a dream job.
I do. I love it.
So you mentioned Rancid as one of the tools. What other tools are you working on?
So Rancid is just, and I know it's you see, this is one of those tools that you mentioned. It's 30 years old, but everyone still uses it. But it's just useful. And again, I think it goes back to the distributed team a little bit. We all work in our own hours and from home. And then when you get, we set it up so it emails out after every change someone makes on the network. And it's kind of nice to see, oh, here, my coworker set up this and this last night, or this changed, or this happened. So it's just, if someone would want to talk about Rancid per se, people usually have a lot of critique towards it, and it needs a little bit of padding and tapping to do the thing that you want it to do, but it is still a useful tool. So we have a set of tools for various purposes that we use. And it starts at simple things like, we need an LDAP server because you want to manage your login somehow over different devices. You need Rancid. They've been using before I started, they've been using NFSend to collect flow data. I'm working with Paolo. You mentioned that in the very beginning, PM account, to turn that around and make that a little more accurate and scalable right now. What other tools are there? Let me think. There's a whole horde. I mean, there's Cacti just to have SNMP stats of interfaces. There is, what else? Should have made a list before,
Oh,
huh?
don't worry. So PM accounting or however.
PM. I think Paolo tries to do it that way every once in a while, but it's just not catching on.
Yeah, he tried to do it on the podcast and it came out perfectly because he is an Italian, but we are just totally hopeless at that. So that was the focus of your Nanoc presentation, right?
Indeed. So Paolo and I have been working together for years now. I've put PM account in place at Limelight already. And then me and a couple of friends started doing the same thing at Microsoft too, and now we're doing it all over again. I guess the main reason is flexibility. There's always some corner case that the off-the-shelf software won't help you with, won't fix the way you need it to. So usually once you have that tools person in place who has the time and the focus to take care of things like that, you want to make your stats accurate, and PM account gives us the possibility to do that, as opposed to NFSend that I mentioned before, for example.
How are you using NetFlow at Netflix? Well, obviously, as much as you can tell us. What are you collecting? What are you doing with that data? How are you using that in the planning process?
Yeah, so I can tell you a whole lot, I guess, because it doesn't really differ that much from any other CDN operation. The thing we do is deliver loads of traffic to providers. So, there is some traffic engineering involved. You have certain capacities, certain ways, and you're trying to figure out how much do I send to which provider, how much can I send this way, how much can I send that way. compare that with statistics, how people are reachable, how you can reroute things different ways, etc. So that's pretty much the standard application that everyone has who has traffic on their side.
In your presentation, you were talking about a very specific trick where you correlated BGP routing with NetFlow data.
There were two tricks. So one of the tricks, and that's something that PM account does, NetFlow data does not necessarily hold the AS path of how you're delivering your traffic. It will give you the destination AS, but you still wouldn't know which way did the traffic take out of my network. So that's one of the advantages of PM account, that it has a built-in BGP daemon. Essentially, you end up setting up a BGP session towards PM account, and it will, in memory, while it collects your network flow data, look up the route that it gets via BGP and assume that this is the way that you delivered your traffic, because it does that at the same, with very little delay, let's say, because it does it on the fly. So it will match up the AS path to all the additional information it gets out of NetFlow and then put that into the database. So this is one of the reasons that PM account is so useful, because it adds that information on top of it. Now, in our case at Netflix, we were using a feature in our routers that distributes our traffic over multiple paths, even though they're not necessarily the best ones. So you would send a certain portion of traffic the first best way and a certain portion the second best way. So we ran into an issue when setting up PM account, which would only get the best path from the BGP session, that it wouldn't be true anymore for certain cases the way it does the matching. You know, usually this is how things go. You send your traffic. This is what BGP is for, right? It figures out what's the best path and you send everything that way. So the way we've been using it, we couldn't use PM account out of the box.
It would be a perfect to have a virtual whiteboard here, but we can't have it on an audio-only podcast. So let's wave our hands and pretend that everyone can see us.
It would indeed. This is the point where trying to explain it in words only is getting a little bit difficult. But I think the best thing I can do is probably if you could link to the NANOC presentation in the podcast somehow.
Don't worry.
Yeah, the slides have the supporting visual aid here for what we're talking about.
So let's say the traffic is exiting your network and is going to destination X, and you can reach destination X through AS A, B, and C. If I understood you correctly, you're effectively taking paths from A, B, and C, and then you're doing some sort of equal or unequal cost multipathing from the egress router toward all these autonomous systems.
Exactly.
And you have three paths in the BGP RIB, and you have three paths in the IP routing table, but the router would only report what it thinks is the very, very, very best path to any internal BGP neighbor or external BGP neighbor, which in your case would be PM-ACCT.
Exactly.
So effectively, PM-ACCT would see one of the three paths that your edge router would be using to propagate the traffic out of your autonomous system.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay, I still know something about BGP. That's good. So how did you solve this problem?
So we sat down with Paolo and we were like, what can we do about this? How can we get, essentially what we want is more than one path at the PM account receiver. So we have heard about EdPath before, a feature that various vendors now support, being able to propagate multiple paths within BGP. They add an ID to the path they send, so they're distinguished from each other. They don't look like the same anymore once you receive it. So the new path would not necessarily mean a withdrawal of the previous one, because it's not the identical same one. It has a different ID, which enables the receiver to keep multiple paths. But that needed for Paolo to be able to support this in PM account. So we're very happy that Paolo is so involved in his open source project. He sat down, spent a weekend, probably had some margaritas while doing it. And a weekend later, we had a prototype of PM account that supported AtPath. And, you know, things like that are a progress. So it took a while to go from here's a prototype. We started debugging it, installing it, testing it, making sure that it actually does the right thing, that what we see is what we see. It usually writing the software is a weekend and five margaritas, and then trying to bring something like that into a production environment takes about 90% of the time. But that's what we fought through the month afterwards.
And he's using Quagga, if I remember correctly, to collect the BGP data, right?
He built the Quagga code into PM account. He essentially ported it into PM account. And I think it underwent a couple of changes already in the meantime. So it's probably not the original Quagga anymore in PM account.
Ah, so he took the Quagga code and tightly integrated it with PM account.
Exactly.
So that he can extract the information faster than I could by screen scraping Quagga CLI, for example.
Yes, exactly.
That was the question I forgot to ask him, because I was wondering how he gets the information out of Quagga, because I couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, he's keeping it in memory. He integrated the code into PM account, yeah. And actually, I know this because in the process of debugging the AtPath feature, we had a couple of issues with making it scale. Because in the end, I set up, let's say, 30 BGP sessions towards PM account, just making up numbers here. Each of them would have 5, 6, 7 paths towards one destination, so that, you know, that gives us a whole bunch of different paths. And suddenly our routing table is so much bigger. So Paolo actually had a very deep dive into the Quagga data structure, into the RIP. So I know he made some changes on that recently too. So I think the code is definitely not Quagga anymore.
Oh my. I'm just trying to multiply this in my head. So you have like 30 sources, 5 alternate paths for every BGP prefix at every source.
Full routing tables.
Full routing tables. So you have 500,000 routes, which means you have 2.5 million paths from every source,
times 30,
that's 75 million RIB entries in the PM account.
And I just made that up. In the end, our setup right now is a little bit different because we don't. So 30 plus routers would pretty much be our entire network, but we have multiple PM account collectors in the network, so it's distributed.
So it's not that bad.
It's not that bad, no. But that would be the worst case scenario if we would want to measure Netflix on one PM account instance.
Yeah, and I would be totally surprised if anyone could manage 75 million entries in a BGP RIP.
So if I remember correctly in our testing, I think we had about up to 20 routers pointed at PM account. So we were close to that.
Wow.
But you know, it's a software, so it's still you put the right server, the right memory, the right resources behind it. There's a lot of room to play around.
Yeah, I mean, still there are everyone else goes like, yeah, we can support 1 million routes, or someone goes like, we can support 4 million routes, and everyone goes like, wow.
But they also need to make decisions with it, right? PM, as far as I understand, PM account doesn't really do much. It's a passive collector, so it doesn't really have to do anything else than storing it.
That's making one
lookup every time your NetFlow packet comes in. Because that's when it goes to the routing table, makes the lookup. What do I know about this route? Matches it up, writes it to the database, and there we are.
By the way, speaking of incoming messages, are you doing actual per flow tracking, or are you already aggregating on the routers and sending some bigger aggregates over to PM account?
No, so we're not aggregating on the, well, we're aggregating NetFlow the way NetFlow is designed. It will aggregate a per flow on the router, expire every once in a while based on the timer we have set, and then send out the flow details to the collector.
So
we don't do additional aggregation on the router side. We would do additional aggregation on the PM account side, just because we would get the same flow would be reported out of a routers multiple times. So every time we get a NetFlow sample in, it could be a NetFlow sample. So maybe let's start here. The interesting part about, and that was something very new for me, dealing with flows on the Netflix network, is we're only dealing with very, very long flows. Nothing here is short. Nothing here is just a blip. Everything is a TV show that is 30 minutes, a movie that is an hour and a half, and all of those flows are actually supposed to stay up that long, unless you see the screen where it says I'm rebuffering and it redirects you to somewhere else and then you get a new stream. But if you view a movie from beginning to end and you're not getting a spinning circle in the middle that does something to your session, you're having one flow on our network. So you're dealing with this huge amount of very long-lasting flows, and when you collect your NetFlow information, this one movie gets reported over and over and over and over again. But essentially, once you know someone is watching that particular movie, you are aware of the session, and that's pretty much it.
So you have probably as many flow records as the old telephone companies had CDRs.
I'd never worked for old telephone companies. What did they have?
Call detail records,
For
CDR.
every so for
For
every
every phone call,
call,
yeah.
for every phone call they had one record.
I never thought about that. You are totally different from most people doing any sort of web-based applications.
So the media, you might have followed a bunch of articles about Netflix, reports how very good they are about statistics, and they are indeed. There's a ton of information and logs and stats that Netflix keeps and has to look at, but they're all server based. So everything I have represents one entire movie viewing session, and the ser you know pretty much it's all HTTP based. So on the server, you see whenever someone accesses a particular content. So the trick now, and what we're trying to do, is to match up the NetFlow data that we're getting with those log records that we already have.
So that you could match the server perspective with the network perspective of how the network is behaving.
It should be identical in our case.
Yeah, well, if you get to 95%, you'll be pretty good. So now you're collecting all this huge amount of data. What are you doing with that data?
Pretty much that. There's already tools to visualize and graph and look at. My job in particular in setting this up is pipe it into existing tools, so we can match existing stats and data sets with this additional information that we didn't have before. Because looking at the server logs and destination IPs or AS numbers, you don't know what way you're delivering that traffic. So this is some additional piece of information that we now have in our data warehouse. And what we then do with it are, traffic engineering decisions.
And do you do them like offline? Every now and then you go and say, okay, let's recalculate how the traffic flows using either internal or commercial tool, or are you modifying the traffic engineering decisions in real time based on this data?
We're not modifying things programmatically yet. I see where you're headed here. So I think one of the goals, and this goes a little bit broader than just NetFlow and traffic engineering, I guess one of the goals that we do have within our entire tool set is to be able to programmatically make decisions, change things, and being Netflix, it's not only about traffic engineering. We have a couple of essentially what you're trying to automate are the tasks that you do on a very regular basis that don't really make sense to do it manually over and over again. There's only a handful of things that we actually do at Netflix, touching the router side. You would set up new sessions, set up new peers, set up new routers, and make changes to how you deliver traffic. And this is pretty much all we do on a day-to-day basis. So those are kind of the things that we're looking to automate out. Now this goes away from the flows a little bit, but we've been working on tools to be able to start doing that. There was nothing really there in the beginning when I got there. So we started out very easy with just having a list of routers and automating a couple of easy tasks based on that list of routers, like setting up the tools that we talked about before, Rancid and FSEN. They all need configurations. Every time we turn up a new router in a new location, we would have to go in and add those things into that configuration. So based on a list that you would add a new router to, you can start automating things like that. Now, we started pulling in more data. We now have, because, you know, you can, when you want to automate things, you have to have a little bit of a access and view of how your network looks like. So getting things, getting configuration out into your network kind of goes hand in hand with ingesting information from your network into some data store, some database that would abstract and describe what you have, right? We pretty much built this database, which has information about routers, about peers, about interfaces and assets that we have around the network. And based on that, we're trying to take our first baby steps into something more automated. That's pretty much all I can tell you right now, because we're not much further with it yet. But the goal being of all those tasks that we do on a regular basis, just automate them out based on the data we have, so we can drink margaritas and push buttons.
So the big idea is identify what you do every day, try to standardize that, try to get rid of it by automating it.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And don't forget the margaritas.
Oh, sorry. And then lean back and do interesting stuff and modify some open source code and drink margaritas.
Exactly.
Perfect summary.
You know, SDN are those big words these days, and I think we briefly, before getting on the call, we mentioned companies like TailF. SDN can be this big fancy thing and open flow and magic and everything in the cloud, and I don't know what buzzwords else, but, you know, to do something in the real world for it, automating the 5 tools that you have to set up every time you put a new router on the network is already a step towards it in our case. So it can be something very simple, and I dare to call things like that SDN as well.
Oh, yeah, the religious zealots would disagree with you, but I totally agree with this definition of SDN. Whatever takes away 90% of my work, I'm happy with that.
Exactly, exactly.
As long as we can replace that with margaritas, right?
Right.
Don't forget
Never forget the goal.
So thanks very much for this short chat, Elisa. Where can people interested in your work find you if they want to discuss these ideas further?
They can email me, elisa@netflix.com. I think that's probably the best way.
No blogging, no tweeting?
No.
Okay, one of those engineers with real life that has some work to do.
I prefer the margaritas over the tweeting and blogging.
That's an attitude to follow.
Exactly. Get away from the screen when you can.
Yeah, unfortunately, I still have to blog, so you can find me at ipspace.net, and every now and then I do replace margaritas with Twitter, so you can follow me on Twitter as at iOSHints. The show notes for today's show, including the link to a Nanoc presentation that Elisa had, will be at podcast.ipspace.net. And if you want to know more about SDN or NFV, a pretty good place to start might be ipspace.net/SDN, where you'll find numerous SDN-related podcasts, webinars, workshops, and who knows, you may decide that what you really need to get your SDN project off the ground is a bit of consulting or maybe a webinar subscription. And don't forget, if you like this show, tell your friend, write a review on iTunes, and subscribe to the podcast, and you'll find the link to do that. You know the URL, podcast.ipspace.net.